And it reminds me of fluffy animals. Actually, it doesn't, but it's useful for this story that it does. A whole bunch of studies have just been released looking at the way that we're currently going about saving our continent's endangered species, or in some instances, not saving them. So we make decisions about which ones to save, it turns out. Are those decisions any good? These studies have been written by a number of ecologists who are members of the Centre of Excellence for Environmental Decisions, and it turns out the way we go about saving endangered species might not be that smart. We might actually care more about how cute an animal is than we care about how important that animal's role is to the survival of the overall ecosystem. So, for instance, cute, fluffy koalas might be on the verge of extinction, but our next guest would argue that in terms of their importance to the environment, well, they pale in comparison to the role of the eucalyptus trees that they munch on. Maybe we should just let the koalas go by the wayside. Dr. Tara Martin is with the CSIRO's Ecosystem Sciences Division. She joins us now from Brisbane. Tara, do you hate koalas?
I love koalas.
Should we be saving them?
That's a really tough question. I think we've already decided that, yes, we should save them because as a public, we believe that they're very important. So there's decisions being made all the time about what we should save and what we shouldn't. The bottom line is that at current levels of funding and rates of extinction, we won't be able to save everything. And so this means we have to make some very hard decisions about what to save. And we can now help inform these decisions with science. And the science that we're doing provides estimates of how many species we can save for every dollar invested.
So we're picking winners and losers, basically.
We are picking winners and losers. And more than that, we can start to make these decisions not just based on the charisma of a species, but based on its function in a particular habitat.
So what are the consequences of getting that wrong? What if we just keep picking cute animals? What happens long-term?
Long-term, we can see complete collapses of ecosystems. We can lose important pollinators. We can lose our pest control services. We can lose our filtration of our water. All of these important services are often performed by less charismatic animals, things like bats and insects and plants. So we're quite good at saving those charismatic animals like koalas and panda bears, and those animals often have great champions. We're less good at saving some of these less charismatic things, which really underpin a lot of the services that we rely on this planet.
I love that you mentioned, say the word charismatic. I mean, a fluffy animal that spends most of its time sleeping. Perhaps charismatic's not the word I would have used, but it's a term that turns up in the literature. I've even heard this term, charismatic megafauna. What's that?
That's right. These are these big, large animals, elephants, lions, tigers, panda bears. They're large animals which we all identify with, and we've already made decisions that those things are very important to save. Whales is another example. But recently, we lost a species in Australia, our first mammal species in the last 50 years, and that's the Christmas Island pipistrel. This is a small insect-eating bat that was endemic to Christmas Island, meant it only occurred on this island. And it went extinct 2 years ago. This small bat is likely to have eaten its body weight in insects every night. So the implications of losing this natural pest controller on this island are possibly quite far-reaching.
So what is the problem then? Basically, we're subordinating this to some kind of, I guess, market of persuasion, that if you can convince me that an animal's cute and it's easy for me to grasp onto that and it's going to go and won't that be horrible, then we'll donate money. But no one's prepared to donate money to things that are boring but important.
That's often the case. Sometimes these charismatic megafauna can act as an umbrella for a whole range of other things, and that is often why we might choose to save the koala, because saving the koala means saving the habitat that it relies on. So it means saving the eucalyptus forest. It means saving that native vegetation. And there's hundreds, if not thousands, of other species that live in that same habitat. So we can use these charismatic animals as champions. But there's many cases where there are no champions. And so what our work is starting to do is developing a prospectus, if you like, for the environment. It tells investors how much they're going to, how many species they can save for every dollar invested. For example, in some recent work we did in the Kimberley, Northwest Australia, we show that for an investment of around $40 million a year, we can save 45 species of animal. These are birds, mammals, reptiles, frogs, from extinction. This is about double the investment of what is being currently invested in that region at the moment.
Okay, but how would you coordinate this? You're talking about a central expert authority that would do this, and then all the funding would have to be channeled through government. I mean, I'm just not sure how exactly it would work.
So our analysis takes into account all of the different actions by various bodies that can occur within the Kimberley. So in order to carry out these actions, there'd be various institutions. Some would be states, some would be federal, some would be based on indigenous protected areas, some would be run by non-government organizations. So all of these organizations would be carrying out a set of actions that are prescribed to get this particular type of benefit. So one of those actions might be managing livestock grazing and grazing by feral animals and fire, managing fire in the region. And there's already a range of organizations which know how to do that. And so it's essentially coordinating those organizations to do it at the right time and at the right level in investment to get the biodiversity benefit.
It's 14 minutes to 7, 14 to 5 if you're listening in the West. You're on RN Drive and I'm speaking with Dr. Tara Martin with the CSIRO's Ecosystem Sciences Division about how we like furry animals that are not as important but endangered, rather than things that are really important. We don't donate money to them and then we end up in lots of trouble. So Tara, just finally, you're the boss of the world, let's say. You've got all the money you need to save the most important things. What are your contenders at the moment? What are the things that you're directing money to first?
I think it's crucial that we look at some of the species which are underpinning some of our most fundamental services. So things like the pollinators, the things that are doing the pest control, the things that are building our soil and clean water. But it's also the things that are distributing our rainforest seeds, for example, things, cassowaries, orangutans. So some of these big charismatic megafauna are actually performing some important services. At the end of the day, we're investing around $25 billion a year on defense. And for a small fraction of that, we could save all 1,700 threatened species in Australia. So it's about making smart investments.
Okay. Dr. Tara Martin, thanks very much for speaking to us today and holding up a mirror to us. Not sure I like what I see there, but thanks very much for doing it nonetheless.
Thank you.
Dr. Tara Martin there with the CSIRO's Ecosystem Sciences Division. Charlie sent in a text saying that we're now losing 75 species a day, more than ever in geological history. An anonymous text makes the prescient point, I think, that beautiful people and beautiful animals get all the attention. It's true, we're a superficial lot.